The last weekend in July, Marxist groups burned Bibles in Portland, Oregon. For months, Marxists have been clashing with federal agents in the city, drawing national attention as the media painted feds with a dark brush because they were blasting Marxists with tear glass. What the media conveniently ignored was the kind of weapons the Marxists were using. Feces, human feces, bleach, bricks, commercial-grade fireworks, frozen bottles of water, and those Big Mama batteries. On that last Friday in July, after midnight, Marxists were caught on video using the American flag and copies of the Holy Bible as kindling for the bonfires that they were setting outside of the federal courthouse. The original target of the riots, police brutality, shifted to another target, and I think this is yet another real intended target. Burning the Bibles has nothing to do with police brutality, so why toss them on the fires? Because to me, it is a visual aid for what Marxist groups want to do with religion, and in particular, Christianity. Burn it. There is nothing new about what the Marxists did. I actually found myself rolling my eyes and thinking, "Woo! You guys do what everybody else throughout the history of the Bible have done. How boring can you get?" Bible haters have been burning Bibles since the first copies of the Bible were churned out. The destruction of the Bible has a long and violent history, as enemies of the Bible have fought to keep people from reading it. After the death of Alexander the Great in 323 BC, the Israelite people fell under the control of an evil ruler named Antiochus the Madman. Included in his bloody persecution of the Israelite people was an attempt to destroy every single copy of the Torah he could get his hands on. An ancient document records this episode. "And the officials of Antiochus rent in pieces the books of the law which they found and set them on fire." Ooh, set them on fire. "And whosoever was found with any book of the covenant, the king's sentence delivered him to death." The ancient historian Josephus verified that if anyone was caught with the Torah, he would be killed in horrific ways. But the madman's plan backfired. Because he was so intent on destroying sacred scriptures, people began asking themselves, "What's in this crazy thing anyway?" Several scholars began to examine it intensely. These scholars determined that the Bible was not like any other document known to man at that time. It was different. It was special. Following the resurrection of Jesus Christ, Christianity was introduced into the Roman world, and it spread like wildfire in a hostile environment of ancient paganism. It wasn't long before Rome began to view Christianity and its New Testament scriptures as a threat to the empire. So history repeated itself. Emperor Diocletian launched a series of merciless persecutions upon those who professed the new religion of Christ. Church historian John Fletcher Hurst wrote, "All assemblies of Christians were forbidden, and churches were ordered to be torn down. Four different edicts were issued, each excelling and proceeding in intensity. One edict ordered the burning of every copy of the Bible." Oh, burning the Bible. The first instance of Christian history when scriptures were made an object of an attack. Events changed after that radically after Constantine took the Roman throne in AD 306. Constantine issued a decree that Christianity was now legal, and so people began to bring their scriptures out of the closet, and they began to influence the culture for good. If one method of ridding the earth of the Bible doesn't work, well, you've just got to try another. Julian, who was Constantine's nephew, ascended to the Roman throne in AD 361. When Julian was a boy, his family was viciously murdered by church people. And this experience, along with his constant exposure to pagan philosophy, led him to renounce Christianity. In his 30th year, the year that he assumed Roman rule, he openly declared his hostility to the Bible. He famously became known as Julian the Apostate. Julian determined that he would destroy any influence of the scriptures. As with everyone else who tried, he failed. Why does everyone fail to destroy the Bible? The Bible itself gives us the answer. 1 Peter 1:24 and 25. For all flesh is like grass, and all its glory like the flower of grass. The grass withers and the flower falls, but the word of the Lord remains forever. And this word is the good news that was preached to you. You can't get rid of the Bible. You can't. So come on, baby, light that fire. The attempt to destroy the scriptures wasn't always bloody and violent. Some attempts have been done vis-a-vis intellectual debates. The first literary attack on Christianity was in AD 178, and a treatise was written called True Discourse. Several ancient books were written to disprove the authenticity of the Bible. These efforts were largely ineffective and were overshadowed by all the constant violence and persecution in the early centuries of the Bible's existence. The Bible not only survived the attacks of its enemies, but it survived opposition of friendly forces as well. On numerous occasions in centuries past, Roman Catholic Church authorities tossed the Bible onto, can you guess, the fire, under the guise that translating it into the common language of the people was sacrilegious. The fourth rule of the Council of Trent was a meeting to denounce the Protestant Reformation. In this meeting, they stated that the indiscriminate circulation of the Bible in the common vernacular would cause more harm than good. Therefore, those who read or possessed the Bible without permission would not be able to receive absolution from their sins until they handed in their copies of the Bible to church authorities. Constant efforts were made by the Roman Catholic Church to suppress the English Bible. In 1543, an act was passed absolutely forbidding the use of Tyndale's version. Contained in this act was the rule that any public reading of the scriptures must be done with someone who had been granted a royal license. During this time, thousands of copies of the Bible were burned. With the rise of the Protestant Reformation came an emphasis on personal Bible reading. This produced a flurry of anti-scriptural actions. In France, rationalism produced Voltaire, a deist who wrote several volumes brimming with hatred of the Bible. No one in Europe did as much to destroy the validity of the Bible as Voltaire. Under Voltaire's influence, France rejected the scriptures. So they took a copy of the Bible, tied it to the tail of a donkey, and dragged it through the streets to the city dump where it was burned. Hey, Portland Marxists, gotta up your game a little. Maybe get a donkey to ride through the streets. Since that time, the government of France has fallen 35 times. Is it a coincidence? Voltaire predicted that within 100 years of his death, you wouldn't be able to find a copy of the Bible. Yet 200 years have come and gone. Today, hardly anyone owns a copy of Voltaire's writings, while almost every home has a Bible somewhere. In America, the battle against the Bible was led by men like Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine, who was born in 1737, was a Quaker, and he gained considerable prominence as a result of his writings. He is especially renowned for writing Common Sense, which advocated for America's independence from Britain. Paine went off to France, where he was influenced by deism. Deism is a belief that a supreme being created the world, and after he created the world, he took a powder. He packed his bags and he left. In deism, there's no such thing as salvation, forgiveness of sins, heaven or hell. There's no such thing as a God who hears our prayers. Paine brought into deism hook, line, and sinker. He wrote The Age of Reason, which is a passionate attack against the Bible. That Paine was underqualified to write a critique of the Bible is an understatement, and this is illustrated by his own admission. In discussing the book of Job, Paine said, "I recollect not enough of the passages in Job to insert them correctly, for I keep no Bible. When I began the Age of Reason, I had neither Bible or Testament to refer to, though I was writing against both. Wait, what's he saying? He's saying he's writing a criticism of the Bible without actually having ever read it. Alrighty then. Paine died a bitter, lonely old man. He lost most of his friends due to his hostility towards Christianity. The Age of Reason is largely ignored today. In most libraries worldwide, it is never checked out. And being a research hound such as I am, I wanted to know if Paine's books are ever checked out in any libraries in America. In the last 20 years or so, I found one library in America that someone checked out his book. That was it. You might have heard some of the names of the men who translated the Bible: John Wycliffe, Miles Coverdale, William Tyndale, Martin Luther. John Wycliffe was an enemy of the church because he translated the Bible into the English language. The Bible was written in Latin at the time, which was considered the official sacred language of the church. The church told him to knock it off or else. But Wycliffe refused because he believed that everyone should be able to read the Bible in their own language. After they excommunicated him, the church plotted to kill Wycliffe, but he pulled a fast one and died before they could get their hands on him. This made the church so mad that they dug him up and burned his bones. They threw his ashes into the River Thames. As a form of poetic justice, Wycliffe's ideas floated through and influenced all of England following the exact route of the River Thames. For a book that many discount as a work of fiction, hatred of the Bible has certainly caused a lot of murder and mayhem. If the Bible is just fiction or a bunch of gibberish, why have so many countries banned it? You just have to ask yourself, if the Bible is fiction, why do the same folks who would never ban Mein Kampf or the Communist Manifesto want to ban the Bible? Because it ain't just a book, and everybody knows it. A young woman who has a lot of problems asks me to send her a Bible verse several times a week. Now, why does she ask me to send her a Bible verse and not a sentence from, say, the Grapes of Wrath or Anne of Green Gables? Because the Bible ain't just a book, and we all know it. It is powerful. It is so powerful that people have been hunted down and killed over it. Johannes Gutenberg got himself on a wanted poster after he invented the printing press, and his first printed product was the Bible. William Tyndale was hunted by bounty hunters for translating the Bible into English. His copies of the Bible were burned as quickly as the bishop could confiscate them. People who were caught with Tyndale's translations were severely punished. Tyndale was eventually caught, tried, convicted, and executed. Martin Luther translated the Bible into German, and he became just one more target of the church. When you hold your copy of the Bible in your hand, friends, you're not just holding a book. You're holding an ancient treasure for which men suffered and died so that we could have a personal copy. It is costly. The Bible describes itself in different ways. It calls itself a hammer, a sword, and a scalpel. Its truths are described as milk, water, bread, and meat. What do all these things have in common? If you don't eat or drink them regularly, you'll die. We were never meant to exist without the Bible. One of my heroes is a woman by the name of Marilyn Laszlo. She was a Bible translator for Wycliffe Bible Translators. She studied linguistics and lived in the jungles for 24 years with a group of people who did not have a written language. Her books and videos have raised more money for Wycliffe's translation efforts than anything else ever has. God called Marilyn to mission work when she was only 5 years old. When she grew up, she traveled to a tribe a little north of Australia to translate the Bible in a little village in Papua New Guinea. And Papua New Guinea has over 700 languages. The people, who were cannibals and headhunters, when Marilyn arrived, were scared to death of her. They'd never seen a white person in their whole lives. They didn't even know white people existed. So they look her up and down, and they have a little conversation between themselves. Is she a man? Is she a woman? Well, we can't figure it out. So finally they say, she's white, she's a ghost. So they give her a little hut in the graveyard to live in, because that's where ghosts live. She has to start at the very beginning of the alphabet. The tribe's people don't even know they have an alphabet. Pretty soon, 14 little boys can't stand it anymore. They've got to see what the white ghost who lives in the graveyard is doing. They've never seen anybody write in their whole lives. They don't even have words for writing, for pens or paper. They finally conclude among themselves that Marilyn is carving on a banana leaf with a thorn to someone referred to as Papa God. These boys follow her every day, and pretty soon they are teaching her their language and helping her translate the Bible. It takes them weeks just to translate one verse. But as time goes on, they pick up speed. Living in this tribe are spitters. Yes, S-P-I-T-T-E-R-S, spitters. These are medicine men who are held responsible for the people's health in the village. When somebody would get sick, the people would call a spitter, and the spitter would come, and they would cast out evil spirits, and then they would chew up some medicinal herbs and plants, and then, you know, get them nice and gummy, and then spit them on the part of the body that the person was diseased. Thus, the term spitter. One day, Marilyn translated Mark 8, 23 through 25. And after she got done, she said to the boys, "Go tell the spitters I want to see them, because I want to read them something." And the medicine men all appeared in Marilyn's hut, and she began to read. And they came to Bethsaida, and some people brought to him a blind man and begged him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had spit on his eyes and laid his hands on him, he asked him, "Do you see anything?" And he looked up and said, "I see people, but they look like trees walking." Then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he opened his eyes, and his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. The medicine men were aghast. On that day, the word of God blew their minds. The men exclaimed to each other, "Jesus is the most powerful spitter in the world." It took 24 years to translate the Bible into the language of these people. And finally, Marilyn is done. The Bible is translated. It is printed and bound in Hong Kong. The Bibles are flown to the mainland and then shipped via canoe to this remote village. As the canoes float down the river toward the village, the people wave palm branches. They jump up and down on the shore and they begin to cheer. "Here comes the word of the Lord. Here comes the word of the Lord." Now, why would anybody be so excited about the Bible? Because it isn't just a book. They knew it. We know it. You can burn it. You can shred it. You can toss it into the deepest sea. But you can't get rid of it, because it's the word of the Lord, and it will last forever.